From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. He went with the
I always game get subdued. What I wanted to do was do something that was more in your wheelhouse this week.
I can do energetic.
You can do energetic. So I wanted to hit you where you're comfortable.
I'm pretty comfortable there. And I'm pretty comfortable sitting in this chair.
After your last week where you went 1-6, you know what I wanted to do?
What'd you want?
I wanted to give you the throws that you can make. I wanted to give you stuff that would help you succeed.
I appreciate
I'm installing the game plan that Rutgers should install for Ethan Calliope-Manis this week. I'm giving you things that you can hit.
I love it.
Yeah.
I went back and you were right. There was a mistake. I had one extra loss for me that wasn't real. So I'm now 40-31-1, and you are 34-37-1. So you are three games below 500, and I am 9 above. So that's pretty good.
You're welcome for figuring that out for you.
Thank you.
I can count.
Instead of 40, yeah. Well, because you do so much for this stuff. So. But we got a great show because we got a preview. Okay, it's not as good as last week.
Why are you saying that up top?
Because
we're supposed to lie to them up
it's
here.
It's just not.
We lie to them now and then we bring it up about an hour and a half in that it sucks.
We do have a Zodiac killer or a Rutgers fan or Stanford fan voicemail to get to later. That's going to be fun.
That'll be beautiful.
If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can. 424-532-0678. We got a few emails, too. You can email us, big10cast@gmail.com. I got a tweet or a DM asking me where to send those emails, but we say it at the top of every show, big10cast@gmail.com. And the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify, you can leave us a 5-star rating for the Podcast of Champions. We appreciate that very much. And if you have, you know, an iPhone or iPad, wherever you're going to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we will put it once a week, pick the best one, and send you a Trader Joe's $17 gift card. We will read those reviews on the recap show. So we did that on Monday. We'll do it again this coming Monday. Our winner hasn't emailed me yet. So email me, ryan@uscfootball.com, if you won. And I will snail mail you a $17 gift card to Trader Joe's. Yeah. And that's that. So we're not going to do the reviews today, right?
We don't do reviews on the preview show.
Okay.
We do them on the recap show.
Okay. So we got to preview a bunch of games.
We do.
Maybe I undersold them.
I think you undersold them a little bit. I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting games. I don't think it's the marquee matchup that we had last week between Oregon and Ohio State. But we do have a ranked-on-ranked game.
We have one ranked-on-ranked, which
is cool.
Yeah, it's
at the fringe of the top 25, but it's ranked-on-ranked. And we've got what I would call a pretty interesting slate of games that could tilt the middle of this league in a lot of weird ways.
Yeah.
So I think it could be a fun and kind of decisive week when we're trying to figure out the tiers in this league, because as we've discussed, everything after like the top 4 or 5 in this league is like, I don't know who's good. I don't know who's bad, except for I know who's bad, and it's UCLA and Purdue. But other than that, who knows?
Okay, so let's get into week 8, unless you have anything else, David.
No, that's all I had.
Okay.
And now let's get into it.
The buys for this week we have
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Also,
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Also,
Penn State Nittany Lions.
And finally,
Washington Huskies.
So those are teams on a bye. Some big names on byes this week. And speaking of big names, and number 2 in the country now, we have
Oregon Ducks.
On the road, taking on
Purdue Boilermakers.
This is one of those classic Friday Big Ten games on Fox at 5 p.m. on Big Fox. Number two, Oregon. They're 6-0, 3-0 in the Big Ten, fresh off of a, I won't say decisive, but very cool home victory over, I think now number three, Ohio State. Going on the road to Purdue, 1-5, but comes with an asterisk, made a massive comeback last week, played extremely well in the second half to almost knock off Illinois on the road. Oregon's a 27.5 point favorite. Mm. If you look at these two teams analytically, there's every reason to think that Oregon could cover that. But short week after just having expended a lot of emotional energy to pull off the win against against Ohio State, Jordan Birch, I don't think we're going to be clear on his status until just before the game. Because that's the way spitting. That's the way that's their defensive end who so we'll see on that. And Purdue, they might be feeling a little angry after that game because they felt like they were very close to a win. They might be fired up to show something. So I'm taking these points on the road on short days rest on a long road trip. Oregon, I mean, they're a far better team, and they're going to win this by, you know, multiple scores. I just don't know if it's going to be four touchdowns. So, yeah, give me Purdue.
I really wanted to take Purdue. I think I'm still going to take Purdue, but I sort of want to just go opposite you on a lot of these just to do it. But the one thing, so we saw last week, 50-49, and I don't think we got to really get into this, and I didn't realize it as much before. And I'm sure you saw this probably, but, you know, Purdue did fire Graham Harrell. Like, they were terrible, right?
Yeah. And whenever you can fire a former USC assistant, it definitely does buoy you. It lightens the load, and you're no longer dragged down as much.
But did you know, so Ryan Walters, the head coach.
Walter Ryan
is a defensive guy.
Mm. Familiar.
Took over offensive play calling duties.
Mm-hmm.
And scored 49. It's pretty. So that was different. He said Walter said that this was from the Indy Star, said that the decision to call the offense himself against Illinois came at, quote, like Thursday morning at 2:30. He had not suddenly been hit with an epiphany, though. A defensive coordinator by trade prior to joining the Boilermakers, coach Walters wanted to refine his fluency of the offense terminology and procedures by midweek. He was satisfied he would make a positive impact. He said he will call the offense going forward, and interim offensive coordinator Jason Simmons will continue to handle the daily practice scripts and provide in-game insight from the coach's box.
I love this.
How cool is that?
I wish more coaches would do shit like this and not treat it like it's, you know, oh, it's a, it's some magical, like, you know, formula to call plays. Like, if you're a really good defensive coordinator and you are really good at it, which he was before he came over to Purdue, you've got to have a really good understanding of what an offense tries to do and how they try to manipulate you. And if you do have that good understanding, learn your terminology, but shouldn't you be able to call effective plays? Because you know what a defensive, you know, coordinator's thinking to try to take stuff away from you. And you should have counterpunches for that. So I like this. I think it's good for his future as a coach, whether it's at Purdue or, you know, elsewhere. And I wish more coaches would kind of treat this as, you know, you should know the whole game. If you're really good at your job, you should know both sides of the ball pretty well.
Yeah, this feels different than when, like, Bill Belichick gave his defensive coordinators, like, you just call the offense. Like, I think it's different in the end. Like, this is college. He's like, you know, I'm going to play with it. And by the midweek, he's like, yeah, I can do this. And he did it. I think it's awesome, you know. And they start off slow, and then they start scoring points. So the point of this being that Purdue does look like they have more of a pulse, and I feel like they're going to score some points in this one. I mean, we've seen Oregon get up for a massive game in this one and against Ohio State. I think they want to go on the road and win, but I don't know if it's going to be some sort of, like, you know, 35-point
I think it'll be like 34-10, like 34-13, and you something cover like that. Yeah. I mean, I think they're going to cover easily, but this is – I think Purdue's going to cover, but I think Oregon's going to win easily.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, college football, so much of it's about your emotional expenditure week in, week out, and they just spent a lot last week. So refueling, especially on 6 days rest after a big emotional output like that, is going to be important.
Yeah. And we've seen Friday night lights in the Pac-12. See if that carries over, if it's just going to be craziness going in there. Okay. Let's go to Saturday morning. We got a few games at 9 a.m. We got first
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
And they're on the road. That's a long trip. Is this the longest trip in the conference? Take it on.
Rutgers Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
It's got to be. I think it's got to be the longest.
So USC's going to, we'll do the Maryland.
But that's,
I think,
a more narrow part of the country.
Yeah,
isn't
I would
it?
Think yeah. Jersey's further. Yeah,
Jersey's further.
What about like to Seattle? Like to LA?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe Seattle.
They're pretty far.
Is Seattle going to Maryland or Rutgers this year? Oh, they did go to Rutgers.
Yeah.
Washington, not Seattle. Okay. Well, that distracted me and derailed me from my
there you go.
Common. All right. 9 a.m. on FS1. 1-5 UCLA traveling to 4-2 Rutgers. Rutgers, do we want to use the line I put in last night or do we want to use the updated line? Because it's now Rutgers -4.5. Do you want that extra half point?
We might as well do it. Yeah,
all right, just extra five. Throw the extra half point in there. So, all right, this is one of those games that I was talking about where this is an interesting game. It's not. I don't think it's going to be well played or interesting on the field, but for like the broad scheme of things for Rutgers, their season and their ability to make a bowl game this year, this is an important one. I think it's not quite a must win because they've already got 4 wins, but it's bordering on that because the schedule from here on out, it's not exactly, you know, sunshine and roses. They've got UCLA, USC on the road, and then Minnesota at home, at Maryland, Illinois at home, and at Michigan State. You can see a couple of wins there, like if they get their stuff together again, but it's also, this could quickly turn. They're having a lot of injuries right now. Their entire secondary seems to be banged up. Middle linebacker, I think, is banged up. They just lost their backup running back, Samuel Brown, in the game, but it was reported today he's out with a season-ending injury. So Rutgers is in a world of hurt, and then they've also kind of beyond that, but in addition to, they've had their worst offensive outputs of the season the last two games, against Nebraska 2 weeks ago and then against Wisconsin this past weekend. Scored 7 points in each game. Couldn't run the ball, which was the death knell, because then Ethan Calikmanis had to throw it a ton. And he was, if I have the stats correct in my mind, 27 of 69 for 289 yards, 3 picks, and a 1 touchdown. So he averaged, I think it was 4 yards per pass attempt, which is devastating. So UCLA coming into this game, obviously they're 1-5, but the one like probably consistent thing about this defense is that they don't allow a ton on the ground.
Okay.
So if you're looking at this and you're looking at, well, UCLA probably, you know, aside from some blunders at the end, probably should have beaten Minnesota at home last weekend. And they can stop the run, and Rutgers looks kind of broken in a lot of ways. I'm taking UCLA +4.5.
All right. I don't feel strongly either way, so I figured I'd just go opposite you. And I'll take
Please. I have picked UCLA games. I'm 1-5 against the spread on UCLA this year, but it's because I'm constantly taking the other team. This is the first time I'm picking UCLA to cover since Hawaii.
Okay. And they didn't cover against Hawaii.
No.
But they're like 4-2 against the spread.
Wait, actually, I might not have picked them against Hawaii, and that might be why I got that one.
Okay.
Yeah. They're doing well against the spread. And I think this one, I could see it going two ways: a close game that Rutgers wins, or Rutgers is so broken that they lose by like 10 points to UCLA. And that's not because UCLA is going to run away with it. I don't think they will. I think even Rutgers' defense is depleted as it is. The reality is that Rutgers is bad against the run, but UCLA can't run the ball. So it's not going to matter. Yeah. But the thing is, they're banged up secondary. I think UCLA is going to find enough in the passing game to score that way. And I really don't know how Rutgers scores. If if they do successfully take away the run, and again, Rutgers is down its very good backup running back, and they're going to have a rotation with a guy who is, I think, intending to redshirt as the number two guy in this game. Manungai has to play.
He's got to play a lot.
He has to play a lot, and he probably has to play close to his best game because they got to take a ton of pressure off of Kaliakmanis. And it's harder to see that at this point.
Yeah, so LA teams are involved in wins when it comes to travel, two time zones or more. LA teams haven't won any of them. It's been people traveling to Los Angeles. So going all the way to Piscataway, and people in the chat were saying, so 200, Mark said, I was looking this up. It's a longer drive from Seattle. I don't know if it's longer as the crow flies. 2,841 miles from UW to Rutgers, 2,779 from UCLA to Rutgers. But I think it's only like 2,500 air miles. I'm not sure what the Seattle one is, but it's close, but it seems like Seattle's probably a little further away. But it's a 9 a.m. game, all that travel. I did hear that UCLA was going to take a plane to this game, so they weren't going to have to do a bus, so that's good.
What?
You were saying there was a question like they might take a bus or something.
What?
It's a joke. But
I don't even understand it.
Instead of they're not going to take the train. They're going to actually take a plane.
No, they're not going to take a boat and go around the the Magellan, Straits of Magellan. What is it? What is it down there?
The Panama Canal?
No, the Magellan thing around the bottom of South America.
Way down
is
there.
That the Straits of Magellan? No, it's not. It's something else.
It's something else. Yeah.
But they will. My brain used to be good. It's not anymore.
Yeah, welcome to my world. Yeah. But yeah,
can I give you some Ethan Kaliakmanis stats, because this is I think important. Because a lot of, I think, Rutgers fans were hopeful this season that
he started off pretty good.
You'd be getting a different version of him. But tell me which season this was, last year or this year, okay? Completion percentage, 53% or 52%? Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Hey, above 500.
Yeah. Yards per pass attempt, he was 6.3 last year, 6.4 this year.
I mean, getting better.
8 touchdowns, 4 interceptions this year. 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions last year. Exact same touchdown percentage. he is the exact same player he was last year in that terrible Minnesota offense.
Yeah.
And I understand it's a slight upgrade still over what Rutgers had at quarterback last year, but I got to figure it's a huge blunder that they opted for familiarity with Kaliakmanis and Kirk, the Rutgers offensive coordinator, because they knew each other from Minnesota. But there had to have been a better option in the portal.
Had to be.
There had to have been. I mean, look at what Indiana did and went and got Curtis Rourke. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, maybe he wanted to go play for, you know, Kurt Cignetti and that whole thing, but there are comparable G5 quarterbacks you can go get. I mean, Minnesota went and got Max Brosmer. Why are you taking Minnesota's leavings?
Yes, that's, Minnesota was terrible.
This team is really missing an average quarterback. And if it had an average quarterback, I mean, they might beat Nebraska and they wouldn't have been. I mean, the Wisconsin game, it looked ugly in the end, but it wasn't that ugly in the middle of that game. They could have made that more competitive if they had competent quarterback play. And I'm not going to pin it all on him. Receiver play has been dreadful the last couple of games. They dropped a touchdown against Nebraska. I think they had 7 or 8 drops last week against Wisconsin. But some of that's also just inaccurate throws or poorly timed throws. And, yeah. And that's anyway, I've clearly watched too much Rutgers this week to write my preview. And so I have too many thoughts about them, and I don't want to talk about this game anymore. So I will take UCLA and the points.
All right. I'll take Rutgers and give myself the victory. Perfect. Okay. Next up, another 9 a.m. game.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
They're going to Bloomington, baby. Take it on.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
All right. This game is another 9 a.m. game on Big Fox. Nebraska, 5-1. So just the one loss. Traveling to number 16, Indiana. Undefeated, fresh off of a bye. Indiana is a 6.5-point favorite at home. I think this is going to be a really good game.
I think so.
I think Nebraska is well coached. I think Indiana is obviously, as we've talked about extensively, coached by a demon by the name of Kurt Cignetti. But I also just think it's a really good matchup. Indiana's rush defense is pretty good. Nebraska's rush offense is pretty good. Indiana's pass defense is pretty good. Nebraska's pass offense is pretty good. Nothing super elite in that matchup, but it's two pretty good units going against each other. You know, that Indiana defense is not the top tier thing that the offense is, but two pretty good units going against each other. I think Nebraska will score a little bit, but I think Indiana is going to stop them a little bit. I think we'll see, you know, Nebraska score in the 20s. On the other end, Nebraska's defense has been very, very good this year, coached by former UCLA Bruin, former UCLA Bruin head coaching candidate Tony White, who I think I'm always going to preface his name with that. Former UCLA Bruin head coaching candidate Tony White.
Was he really?
Uh-huh. But you got Indiana's rush offense. That's decent, and it's going against, I would say, one of the probably the best rush defense they've faced this year.
Yes.
And then you've got Curtis Rourke in that passing offense, which is arguably the best passing offense in the country this year, going against a pretty good pass defense. I think that's where the advantage lies for Indiana. I think they're going to be able to find some things in the passing game, as they have against pretty much anybody. And so I think that's where the separation will be. The question is whether it's 6.5 points of separation. And I'm going to take the Hoosiers because it's at home. But I do think these two teams on a neutral field would play, you know, 10 games and Indiana would win six. Like, I don't think there's actually that much separation. And I think Nebraska is going to throw some things at this offense that I think will trip them up a little bit more than teams they've faced this year. But ultimately, I like Indiana probably, I don't know, 28-21. Something like that. Indiana.
I'm going to do the same. I really want to go opposite you, though. But Mark in the chat says, I don't trust Nebraska to win these types of games yet.
Yes. I mean, there's a little bit of that, too. And it's going to be a close game. And what do we know about close games in Nebraska? Pain.
What's your prediction? Pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, love Indiana. So here's the thing, though, that Indiana's played a very cupcakey kind of schedule. But they've covered spreads. They've blown these teams out.
Yep.
They've looked really good doing it. They've done what you've asked them to do. We saw Minnesota go into the Rose Bowl and, you know, that was a close game,
yeah.
Right? And Indiana wasn't. It wasn't a close game. They've taken care of business, but have they faced like linemen like they're going to see against Nebraska, probably on both sides, this year? I don't think so. Like that's where you can get punched in the mouth a little bit more. And I think Nebraska can go in there and be really physical with them. But I like this team. If it was more than a touchdown, I think I would take Nebraska. But just being that hook under a full touchdown, 6.5 points, I'm going to take Indiana on this one. But it'd be big. If Nebraska can go in there and get a win, I mean, that would be huge. And I think they can fight with them. But I feel like this is going to be a touchdown, 10-point game, something like that.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, next up, we got the high-flying. Oops.
Wisconsin Badgers.
Who we thought we were left for dead, and then they're like good. Against another team that we
thought
was left
for dead. The high-flying.
Northwestern Wildcats.
All right, another 9 a.m. game on the Big Ten Network. Wisconsin 4-2 now, sort of rallied and kind of the last 2 weeks have blown out their opponents. Going on the road to take on Northwestern in Evanston at that weird little stadium by the lake. Northwestern is 3-3, but they just went on the road and blew out Maryland last week. Little bit of a weirder game. That one involved some kind of the classic Northwestern complexion of a victory where it's like weird, like defensive touchdowns and like just weird things happening.
Yeah. Maryland had three turnovers all season, had four in the game.
Yeah. But at a certain point, that becomes a trend for a team. Northwestern, when they win, it gets weird. Like it's strange. But you can't ignore that both of these teams seem to be figuring a couple of things out. I think Northwestern maybe a little bit less so than Wisconsin. Wisconsin's a 7-point road favorite, which feels like a lot. But I don't know. I kind of buy their turnaround a little bit more than I buy Northwestern as a suddenly good team. Mm. Like, I think Wisconsin, if you look at what they did last week against Rutgers, I mean, I know Rutgers' rush defense wasn't any great shakes before that game, but Wisconsin ran for, I think it was it 300 yards? Was it 300 yards rushing and 200 yards passing or vice versa?
I think it was.
One of the two, and that's a lot. And I wouldn't say, you know, Northwestern's defense isn't what it looked like against Maryland last week. Like, it's not that good. I think their rush defense is a slight cut above Rutgers, but it's mediocre. I think Wisconsin can run the ball and control this game. And they're comfortable playing in those kind of conditions. I mean, it's not like it's going to be a big whoop-de-doo to play in, like, you know, cold weather by a lake. And it's also going to be 9 a.m. That's no big deal. It's not like a night game. So, yeah, I like Wisconsin to control this game on the ground and cover the 7 points.
Okay.
And I think Northwestern, I'm not really buying their offensive turnaround that much. I think Jack Lausch is an upgrade at quarterback for them. But I don't know. I like this one probably 27-14, something like that.
I'm with you. I really wanted to pick opposite you, but I was definitely leaning towards Wisconsin. Matthew got kicked out of knocked out of the survivor pool because of his Northwestern Maryland pick last week. He says arguing Northwestern last week was a dead wildcat bounce. I don't know if they're going to bounce back. And Maryland looked absolutely just, I don't know. They did not look very good last week. I'm sure Maryland will probably play better this week. I'm not sure Northwestern is going to, but I feel like Wisconsin is sort of trending in the right direction. 7's a lot for a road situation, but I do like Wisconsin this one, so I will stick with the Badgers.
Yeah, and I know people gave me some crap about it, but that first half against USC, like, that's where you first start seeing Wisconsin figuring some things out, and that game, again, was a lot closer than the final score appeared because of the pick six at the end. And then they blew out two of the bottom half teams in the league really easily. And where would you say Northwestern is situated in the league right now?
Bottom half.
So I like Wisconsin. I think they're going to finish the year as strong as you can when after this game it goes Penn State at home, at Iowa, Oregon at home, at Nebraska, and then Minnesota at home at the end.
Mark says, I'll take Wisconsin, but Northwestern embarrassed them 24-10 in Madison last year. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on. Our next game, this is our ranked-on-ranked matchup. We've got
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow, scratch, 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 scratch.
On the road in Champaign, taking on
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one. Do you want to change this one, too? Because I think it's 3.5 right now.
For sure.
So 12:30 p.m.
I'm picking Illinois.
So yeah. Exactly. 12:30 p.m. on CBS, number 24, Michigan, 4-2. Fresh off a bye, going on the road to take on number 22, Illinois, 5-1. Fresh off of almost losing to Purdue at home. Michigan's a 3.5-point road favorite. News out of Michigan this week is that Jack Tuttle is going to be the starting quarterback. So this will be the third quarterback who started a game for Michigan. He didn't start the last game, right? He just came in relief.
Maybe he started the last one, too.
I don't remember.
Watching
him, I didn't think he was the answer, necessarily. I just thought he was, you know, able to throw a football, which I still don't know that we have evidence that Alex Orji can. This one's, it's going to come down to, is there a hangover effect for Illinois after that second half horrible showing against Purdue? Because going into that second half, I would have said Illinois, you know, projecting ahead to this game, I would have had them as, like, obviously favored in this game, if not, you know, 5-7 point favorite, just from my own kind of headspace power rankings, because I think Michigan's kind of fraudulent. But Michigan has had a week off to figure some stuff out. Do you think that's significant?
I don't know. Like, they're pretty limited, and like, they get Tuttle in there and he throws for under 100 yards, and you're like, hey, here's our guy. They didn't look great on the road. This is another road game. Yeah, I think they can run the ball on Illinois, and that I think that's been the weaker part of their defensive side of things. But I just like Illinois in this one. I mean, I just feel like they're a home dog. Michigan hasn't shown much on the road. They haven't been on the road much. They didn't look very good against what we thought was maybe a pretty good Washington team, and they haven't looked that good since. So I think Illinois can be pretty good here. So I'm gonna take the line.
I will say, you know, from a matchup standpoint, it is a better matchup for Michigan in some ways. Their rushing offense pretty good. Illinois' rushing defense
not great.
Not great.
Yeah.
Illinois' passing defense is elite, but how much does that matter against a Michigan team that can't really throw the ball anyway, and probably won't even intend to? And then on the other end, Illinois' passing offense is good, but Michigan's entire defense is pretty good. So I could see it being really low scoring, but I see it being low scoring and close. Like, I think whoever wins this is winning it by three. So I'm going to take those points.
Yeah, give me the points. I think Luke Altmaier's the best offensive, you know, player. Like, I don't think Michigan has anyone that can do anything like what Luke Altmaier can do. I think they're going to have enough success in the passing game. So I'm going to go with you on this.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's see what happens there. All right. Next up, a couple teams really just jonesing for a Big Ten win. We got
USC Trojans.
Fairly long trip to
Maryland Terrapins.
Snap, 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 snap. 1 p.m. on FS1. USC 3-3, 1-3 in the Big Ten. Heading on the road to take on Maryland, 3-3, but 0-3 in the Big Ten. Fresh off getting blown out by Northwestern at home. USC is a 7-point favorite in College Park. So USC, they've only played close games in losses. They haven't had the experience that Maryland just had, getting smoked off the field by Northwestern. Yeah. I'm super intrigued by. I think, you know, going into that game, my impression was Maryland is a good to solid, like a solid to good team.
Yeah.
And that obviously got thrown a little bit. I don't know if you throw that game out as like just kind of a everything goes wrong game and you just get blown out. Because I think it's hard to just kind of flush that. Even if you're like, for us as, you know, people watching the games and analyzing it, but also for the players, like you lose at home by almost four touchdowns to a, you know, bottom tier team, that's got to affect you some way. Now it's a question of, you know, how do they respond to that? Because I think there's the talent here to win this game. Like Maryland's defense coming into that game was pretty good. I mean, they're a really balanced defense. They're in the, you know, high 30s against the rush, low 40s against pass. Like they're solid. And I think USC's offense has some flaws. They've been a much, much better running team than a passing team, but that doesn't seem to stop Lincoln Riley from forgetting that he has running backs every now and then.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you know, Maryland's had some really productive showings from Billy Edwards at quarterback. I think, you know, when we were talking preseason about their quarterback potential and wondering, you know, whether they were going to be able to find the answer quickly, they found it really quickly, and he's been really good for the most part. But USC's defense has been solid too. Like it's not the joke of a defense that it was. Once again, I'm predicting probably a lowish scoring game. I think this will be played in the 20s. And it's 7 points, which seems insane to me. I'm going to take Maryland plus 7.
All right. I'm going to go opposite you. USC's desperate to get a win. First ever Big Ten road win. I think in the chat, Tony pointed out Maryland's in disarray. And we'll see. Was that just like an anomaly? Or things just have the wheels fallen off the Terps bus over there? I'm kind of leaning towards the latter. USC needs to go out and just, I think they're tired of all the talk about being close and things like that. So I could see them going out and you know, putting a beat down on the Terps in this one. And we'll see. Long trip. We haven't seen that really from teams playing well.
When was the last time USC put a beat down on anybody?
I mean, they beat Wisconsin by whatever.
They beat them with a pick six at the end that made it a 17-point game, and it was a 10-point game, right?
Yeah.
At home.
But that 10 points, you're covering the spread.
Against a team that was starting their backup quarterback for the first time.
Yes.
Yeah. The only other team they've really blown out, like really Utah beaten State down whatever, convincingly, was Utah State.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I think there's a lot of questions about USC. I think their passing offense, it's insane to me their passing offense isn't better.
You're right.
Zachariah Branch has not developed as a downfield threat. With all those receiving weapons they have, to not have a consistent, you know, Miller Moss, I mean, what's he averaging right now in yards per pass attempt? Because
I think it's in the sixes or something.
Yeah. And it's just like, this is an offense with those weapons that should be averaging 10, like at all times. And if you look at Lincoln Riley's history as a play caller, his quarterbacks are always averaging over 10 yards per pass attempt. Something is making this offense really limited in what it can do in terms of explosive plays. And I think it's offensive line to a large extent, but I wonder if it's not having, again, like it's not Miller Moss who's a problem, but the fact that he doesn't have the ability to move around and make plays with his legs to the extent that every other quarterback that Lincoln Riley has ever had does. I wonder how much that plays into it, because, you know, Caleb Williams oftentimes was making those big explosive plays out of broken plays.
Yes.
And, you know, the same can be said for, you know, guys in the past for Lincoln Riley. I wonder how much of that is missing, and I wonder how much of that affects their ability to blow out teams in victories, because they're not the high scoring team that they've been under Lincoln Riley. So. Yeah, I think USC wins. I just think it's like, I don't know, 27-24.
Something like that. Yeah. Lincoln Riley had 5 starting quarterbacks in the NFL last weekend.
Like, I know.
That's insane.
Well, and it makes you like a chicken or egg thing, right? Where it's, was it he made them into NFL quarterbacks, or did he have a lot of talent? And that's not to say, like, I could have a lot of talent and I wouldn't coach them to being very good.
Yeah.
So obviously there's some of it for Lincoln Riley, but also a lot of those guys are more mobile than Miller Moss is. And I just think that mobility factor kind of gets lost. And that's not to say Jaden Maiva or whatever is a better quarterback, but having somebody with legs, I think, really aids a system like this. And it was the same thing. Same thing was true for Chip Kelly too. When he stopped having quarterbacks who could move, the offense suffered.
Gotcha. All right. Well, so we'll disagree on that one. We got one last one. The night capper. We have, let's see, who's up? We have, I can find it.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
The best one. And then we got
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
Iowa going on the road to Michigan State, 4:30 p.m. on NBC. Iowa is 4-2, 2-1 in the Big Ten. Michigan State is 3-3, 1-2 in the Big Ten. Iowa is a 5.5-point road favorite. The last time we saw Michigan State, they were rolling over and dying at Oregon, but not quite enough for us to cover. Before that, they rolled over and died against Ohio State. And before that, they lost on the road at Boston College. Is Michigan State dead? Or do we think Jonathan Smith, with a week off, has done something here? That's question one. Question two is Iowa suddenly a juggernaut? Iowa's rushing offense last week against Washington was dominant. Michigan State's rush defense has probably been the best part of their team, though. If Michigan State can stop that rushing attack, and they've shown some ability to stop the run this year, this one could turn into an ugly slog, because if you're forcing Cade McNamara to make throws, good luck. I think you could be looking at some Ethan Calikmanis stat lines just suddenly out of nowhere.
Eesh.
But on the other end, Michigan State, what are they going to score? Like, how are they going to score? Aiden Childs has been a turnover machine. You can't be a turnover machine against Iowa. You can't be inefficient against Iowa. Iowa's defense is just too good, too balanced, the whole thing. I think this is going to be a hideous football game. But
yay, NBC.
It's on the road at Michigan State. I'm going to take Iowa.
Yeah.
Iowa, I just think, is a fundamentally better team, but I think it's going to be a hideous game. I think they could win like 13-6, 13-3, something like that. I think Michigan State's going to be able to stop their run game to a large extent, and then it's going to be just a matter of how many defensive scores do they get off of Aiden Childs, or how many, you know,
yeah,
long interception returns stopped at the 20 that they kick a field goal, you know?
Yes. No, I'm going to agree with you. I like Iowa in this one. Just the way it's a buttoned up team. They've figured out the run game. You have one of the best running backs in the conference for sure. I don't think the matchup, like, I like Jonathan Smith coached teams, but this team is still like a work in progress. Like you said, they might be dead. We'll see what they do coming off the bye week. But these are the kind of teams that Iowa just like chews up and spits out,
yeah,
right? Like, just, you're going to make the mistake. You're going to make a, but this team makes a bunch of mistakes.
It's like what they
Iowa
did at,
jumps on you when you, yeah, make those mistakes.
At Wisconsin, you know, they won 31-14. Like, you could see that. I think Michigan State's run defense is good. And with that run defense against this rush offense, and they're going to know running is coming. The trick against Iowa and the trick against Rutgers is force them into passing downs, force them into obvious passing downs where you're then going to count on horrible quarterback play. Because I think Cade McNamara and Ethan Calikmanis, when they can play, you know, ahead of the sticks, and they can make throws on, you know, second and two, third and one, like that sort of deal, they can be a lot better. But when it's obvious you're going to be throwing, they're not accurate enough. They make poor decisions, and you end up with a lot of picks or really inefficient quarterback play. So I think Michigan State's going to be able to do that to an extent. I just don't – again, I just can't see them scoring.
Yeah, it's hard to see that happening. And I was like one of the defenses where, like, you know as the Iowa offense, like, there's the aversion to the forward pass. And like, what was it the old – school coaches like, three things could happen when you throw and two of them are bad, you know? That's sort of like still the Iowa mentality. And then you look at an Aiden Childs on the other side, and that's like the poster child for what, you know, this is the bad things that could happen when you throw the football. He might make a couple spectacular plays, but it's hard for me to imagine.
Yeah, no, Kirk Ferentz shares stories about Aiden Childs to scare his grandkids.
This
is what can happen when you throw the football.
You shouldn't throw the ball.
This is why you don't throw the football, kids. Yeah. It's like Halloween scary stories you tell kids. You know,
yes.
Like, oh, if you take that candy, you're going to get, you know, razor blades in your stomach.
Right.
That's what he's telling people about Aiden Childs.
So I just feel like, I know it's a road game, but I just feel like this is going to be like the Iowa just sort of like, this is tortoise in the hair kind of thing, and just they're going to tortoise the hell out of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's it for all the games. Let's take a quick break and we'll do some questions.
I just noticed something. We only picked different on the games that we cover personally.
Oh, really?
And so you know what's going to happen, right? You're going to be right on the UCLA game, and I'm going to be right on the USC game, because certainly we can't be competent about the teams we cover.
No, hell no.
Yeah.
Good stuff there.
Yeah.
I wanted to switch some other ones, but yeah, that's what we do. Okay, we have a voicemail. Here we go.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, Sith Lord Dave. That's right, it's me, this resident Rutgers fan. I'm sorry, I'm feeling a little down this week. All my teams are getting their ass kicked. I guess I don't even qualify for a Trader Joe's gift card anymore. I'm not following the rules. I really needed that gig because I put all my life savings into mybookie.com, followed Ryan's picks after his 7-1 week, figuring this guy's really on to something. And I got my ass kicked. You know, serious people need money and stuff, things to go well too, okay? not just all rainbows and butterflies over here. So I guess my question is, I need some light to look forward to going forward. So whose pick should I go with and why? At mybookie.com. Promo code COD. Maybe you'll make some money back. Side note, I went 2-0 on my first round of ACC picks and wasn't even acknowledged. Keep it mediocre.
Nice.
All right, I don't like this because we can't have the Zodiac killer feeling emotionally unstable.
No, that's
people could
not
be
good.
Harmed.
You are still eligible for a Trader Joe's gift card. All we need is your home address. That's it.
This isn't good though. I think this puts even more pressure on us to get our picks right this week.
It is.
Whose picks do we feel better about?
I don't know, but it's not the promo code. What did he say? I forget what it was. Promo code POC.
You're correct.
If you want to do your picks over at MyBookie. Now, we both had a bad week last week. I was worse. Hopefully, we can bounce back this week. Go against us. Do whatever you need to do over at MyBookie. But you want to bet these games. Like, these are fun games. There's some really interesting spreads. Is Oregon really going to cover 27.5 on the road coming off of that emotional win over Ohio State? Should Michigan be a road freaking favorite at Illinois? You can bet all these, whatever you feel strongly about, over at MyBookie. And like I said, the promo code is POC. 100% initial deposit match of your initial deposit. So if you do $100, it'll turn into $200. You can bet even more stuff over there. So make sure you use promo code POC. And remember that you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
I love that he just allowed you to remember to do the promo.
Yeah. Well, I was waiting because he was talking.
Because you knew
it.
That was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't take people behind the curtain. Don't let them know that we prepare. Ever.
Oh.
Come on.
Okay. I was not prepared. I just like did that.
Yeah. You just knew.
We feel bad though.
Yeah.
But you can get your gift card. We just need the FBI or we need your address so I can send you.
Right. Okay. And I want to don't be upset. Zodiac killer. Resident Rutgers Stanford fan. Don't be upset.
His teams have stunk.
Try to maintain center. You know, we don't want to start the ugliness again. Right. We've talked about that in the past. We don't want to start that again.
No.
So let's just eyes forward, right?
Different way to channel some of your emotions.
Correct.
Than serial killing.
Correct. The ugliness. We're calling it the ugliness.
All right. You want to do, I think we have two emails. You want to do the first one?
Sure. Laterals, the final frontier. Hey guys, Alex here with a general question about the evolution of the sport. As we all know, football coaches are an inherently conservative group, more concerned with avoiding backlash from fans who don't understand probabilities than making the decisions most likely to put their teams in position to win games. Looking at you, Deshaun. However, the two Dans of houses Lanning and Campbell appear poised to lead a glorious revolution into a new age of avoiding punting whenever possible and being willing to trade field position for a chance to steal possession. Campbell's Lions have even begun using designated hook and ladder plays as an infrequent part of their standard offense as opposed to exclusively out of desperation at the end of games. Given the lateral's potential to generate explosive plays as well as to disrupt how a defense is able to pursue and defend downfield ball carriers, do you guys think that the designed hook and ladder will ever become a frequent fixture in playbooks on the level of, say, the flea flicker, or will it remain the exclusive purview of the exceptionally aggressive coaches? Additionally, is there ever a point where ball carriers are coached to look for a potential lateral opportunities even on non-designed plays? Thanks.
I love that.
I love it too. I do think laterals, it's all about decision making. And I think for coaches, it's trusting people to make the proper decisions. And I think if it was a little bit more of a flowy sport like basketball, I think they would be more willing to allow that kind of free form improv. Because I think you can't. The thing with a lateral is it depends so much on what the defense ends up doing in response to you, how they end up tackling you, what their angles are on you, and what the angle is on the return on the guys around you.
Yeah.
So it's either a very, very intricately designed play that you have to use against the specific coverage, or it relies on decision making. It relies on all of your receivers, all of your playmakers being able to make, you know, smart choices. And I just don't know how much coaches trust their players to do that who aren't the quarterback and the offensive linemen or whatever. I do think it's worth exploring, though, for teams that do have that level of trust. And also, I think it's better for teams that practice simple. They practice simple offenses. You know, we've got a handful of plays, and then here are some things we can do out of these plays versus the ones with like intricate, long, big playbooks. But it is, I mean, you're totally right that it does lead to a lot of explosive plays when you can master that.
Yeah.
And there's a reason teams use it at the end of the game. I think it's just, it's another element of risk when you're having a pitch or you're having a, you know, some sort of lateral going on, that a lot of these coaches, they already consider passing the ball forward a risk. And so then adding an element where you're throwing it again, I think a lot of, for a lot of football coaches, like the hairs rise on the back of their necks even thinking about it. But yeah, I mean, if you just treat it as, oh, this is another play we can do that can generate a 30 plus yard explosive, why aren't we doing it? I'd be interested to see if like a guy like Lanning starts to incorporate stuff like that more into what they do offensively, because especially with their kind of dink and dunk system, instead of doing your reverses behind the line of scrimmage,
it's like a reverse
throw one, you know, throw a little crosser to one of your receivers and have another one running across and taking a pitch the other way. I mean, that's a potential touchdown whenever you do it. So just working those in every now and then so that, and it's also another thing teams have to prepare for. If you're doing that, then suddenly you don't have a whole crew of guys trying to tackle this receiver who caught it. They have to stay balanced. So I don't know. There's a lot of things to think about there.
Yeah, I think we've seen the Lions do some stuff, but I think it was like the Chiefs. I think Travis Kelce did one, and it was kind of ill-advised. Like, I think Mahomes, they only needed to get in a field goal. I forget what it was. It was the end of the game, but he pitched it anyway, and they got more yards. And it was like, no, yes, when it works, you know. But, yeah, I like that as far as people use it at the end of halves and end of games, because if you – fumble it doesn't matter, and if especially if you just have to score no matter what, but there are, you know, maybe even at the there's other opportunities. And I think it's when you're watching film and you see coverages that, okay, here's a this is designed for a receiver to catch a ball in front of like some coverage, and you know there's going to be a conversion, like guy, you know, safety's breaking down on him. But you could see if your receiver coming from the slot or whatever is open and you can just sort of like pitch it out there, like that side of the field is going to be wide open now because everyone's converging here in the middle, whatever it is. If you see something like that on film and it's workable, where if the worst case scenario is like, okay, I'm not going to pitch it, and you just catch it and get tackled because you're like sitting down in front of the zone.
Yeah.
But if that guy is streaking and is open and I can pitch it to him, now, yeah, there's a risk because you got to pitch the ball. And some defenders are bearing that. But I like that. I think it'd be cool to see. Maybe you'll see more of it.
And build it into your kind of – I would say just like kind of build it in as a standard thing on your, you know, kind of simple drags where it's like a one-read thing where you know we're going here because it's against a certain type of coverage. Have your other receiver just kind of swooping through, you know, on like mesh concepts, like, I don't know. Something to think about.
Yeah, and then maybe what, you know, one out of 20 –
it's just a lot of this stuff is timing related. A lot of it is like if – you know, if they're not in the right position at the right time, then the coverage is blown, you know.
Yeah.
It's all that stuff.
But it's like, this is the play. One out of 20 times, this guy's going to be, like, you're going to see him come free wide open, and then you could pitch it to him. Like, you catch the ball, get tackled, move the sticks, move on. But that one time, you see, it's like, everything's working, and you're like, I think it might work here. Then you kind of do it. So, build it off the other plays. Kevin, USC NIL question. Hello. UCLA announced they are splitting up their NIL into three separate entities, men's basketball, football, and women's basketball / Olympic sports. Is this something other universities are doing as well? Also, the UCLA NIL donation link is no longer pinned to the Bro Football Board, but is it still? But it's still pinned for basketball. What should I read into this? Thanks from Kevin.
Is it something other schools are doing? I don't know. I think so.
I'm not.
I have no idea.
I think for USC, you can like specify where you want to put dollars, but I don't think there's a separate entity for it's all under one roof. I haven't heard that separate like organizations like raising.
It's not separate. So the way UCLA is structuring it now is that there's one overarching like company essentially, which is Champion of Westwood, which has Men of Westwood, which is the men's basketball team, Champion of Westwood, you know. They have the same name for some reason. That's women's basketball and then all other Olympic sports. And then Bruins for Life, which is the new component, which is going to do football.
Okay.
So it's an interesting structure. Bruins for Life is the new piece. Everything else was the same, and Men of Westwood was handling football until now. And now Bruins for Life is taking that piece over, but it's still under the same kind of umbrella company. Now, for why administratively, we had a giving form on Bro for the Men of Westwood Football Fund, which doesn't it still exists. Like, existing plans are still going to that because it's fulfilling current contracts, and then they'll just kick it over to whoever Bruins for Life wants to give it to.
Yeah.
But we don't want to take new subscriptions there. They should just go to the Bruins for Life website.
Okay.
Sorry for the administrative stuff here, but...
you love that stuff.
I just love talking about technical details on a podcast. People enjoy it. But yeah, just go to the Bruins for Life website if you want to give to football NIL. We just don't have an independent form for it on Bro.
Matthew says, very creative naming.
Mm.
I wonder if of other basketball schools
so I will
if
say,
they're doing that.
I will say
if
a
other
note.
Basketball schools
I got to say a note.
It.
I got to say a note. Okay. Because I would love it if people just did the due diligence when they are creating new organizations to just simply Google it once before creating it.
Oh.
Because BruinsForLife.com is currently a giving site for Belmont University.
Ah.
That's not great. Because it's also a giving website. So, you know, confused, you know, UCLA fan. Oh, I'm going to go to Bruins for Life. Oh, BruinsForLife.com.
Belmont
they don't look
Bears.
At the rest of it. They hit the donate button and they're giving money to a university in Tennessee. Not great. Got to have a good feel for this stuff. But it just requires a Google search. That's all it requires.
Okay.
And also Bruins for Life, you know, that can sound like a lot of other things too.
Yeah. Alex says, how much is UCLA rebranding NIL a good reaction to reality versus smoke and mirrors to direct money to football over basketball that seems to be debated by those who don't trust Martin Jarmond, the
athletic
director?
Let me see if I can
parse
this. Hang on. Okay. All right. I mean, I think it's a reaction to reality. I do think it was a lot on Ken Graewer, who was handling both. It was a lot on his plate to do both. He originally started out doing basketball, and they've done a great job with basketball. They were doing a good job, or as good a job as they could do with football, given football's participation and everything. But it was a lot on his plate, a lot to handle. So I think having other people who are going to, you know, do the bulk of that work is great. That's a good reaction to, I think, Ken Graewer's now a reality. And then the other part, I don't I might have missed something, but I don't know how much of this has anything to do with directing money to football over basketball or anything with that Jarmond stuff. I think it's more a reality of time and you know, ability to connect with football and make stuff happen with the football staff.
Yeah. I mean, it's basketball school, so what are you going to do?
You know, look, man, I'm going to fight you.
All right, we got one last one from DBID1. Is Ryan fishing again tomorrow? No, I'm actually traveling to Maryland for the USC game, but I'm going a day early.
For vacation?
Well, my sister lives there, so I'm going
to... For vacation?
I'm going to stay with my sister.
He's going to have a vacation?
My sister is there.
A vacation with your sister?
Washington, D.C., a day early.
To vacation with your sister?
I'm actually saving money. I'm staying with my sister.
To vacation?
To go to cover the game.
Uh-huh.
So I'm actually saving
travel
money.
When is the game?
Saturday.
1 p.m.?
No, it's...
When's the team get there?
The team's not getting there till later on Friday.
Yeah. And you're getting in there when?
Thursday.
So you're vacationing for a day?
Maybe.
Yeah. What are you doing that day? You're going to go fishing?
No, we're not going to go fishing.
Going to go out on the boat?
I don't know. No, I don't know what we're going to do.
Going to go eat some crab cakes?
Well, hopefully, yes. Yeah. I love eating crab cakes.
Yeah.
I love going to Maryland. And yeah. I went over Christmas to see my sister, and we go get the seafood and stuff. It's really good. Have you been out there? Have you been to the DC?
To Maryland?
DC area?
I've been to DC several times, yes.
Yeah. It's cool.
I was there for the, what is it, the Cherry Blossom Festival?
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, when the cherry blossoms come into bloom. So to speak, yeah, when I lived in Atlanta, we took a couple of trips up to D.C.
Mm.
The district. The Washington District of Columbia.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, USC's leaving later on Friday than they normally would leave. Yeah. For a longer trip. I think that's weird.
Lincoln Riley being a brain genius.
There are actually, I think there's... Uh-huh.
Yeah, let's hear the defense of Lincoln Riley.
I think you should leave Thursday. I think they should go to like the museums and stuff on Friday and like enjoy
DC. There is
DC.
A school of thought that arriving as close to kickoff as possible doesn't have as much effect on your body clock as trying to adjust for several days. Fine. That seems stupid.
There's some people
to me.
That do that. I don't like that either, but there's been studies and there's NFL teams that actually do this. So he's just listening to some people that, you know, but I mean, it's DC. Like, would you be okay with like a team doing like the museums and stuff or like seeing the Capitol or whatever it is? Like, do some cool.
I'm okay with anything that treats this as more than just like a miserable military-esque slog. Yeah. Like, if you're going to a cool place, like, it'd be great if UCLA turned the Rutgers trip into, hey, we're going to get these guys to New York City because some of them have probably not seen it and some of them maybe never will. So
yeah, like we're all going to get slices
downtown.
We're all going to
go up to New York City and we're going to get back on Monday and screw you media people. We're not going to have practice on Monday, but this is a life experience thing. Especially like, I don't know, if you're Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State, sure, treat it like it's friggin', you know, a miserable, serious thing all the time. But if you're just one of the other like 100 teams in college football, have some fun.
Yeah.
Go to some museums. Go see the Statue of Liberty. Take some stupid pictures. Like, what the hell? Why not?
I'm with you, man. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. What do you want to pose this week? Like, do you travel? Like, we're both of our teams are traveling a long way. I'm actually going. You are not. You want to do like plane? I don't know. Like, travel. Yay. Big Ten life.
We love
For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.